Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you think it's wrong for Christians and other conservatives to be so hard on the religion of Islam. Oh, sure, the terrorist attacks are coming in the name of Islam, but the terrorists aren't attacking because of the Quran. They are attacking because of America's support of Israel. And Israel is guilty of illegally occupying the poor Palestinians. You're wrong, my friend. So wrong that I am in the midst of a radio series just to show you how wrong you are, although you are probably saying this and thinking this sincerely. So I should give you a little bit of a break. The viewpoint expressed on this program is seldom expressed anywhere, so I can't blame you. Welcome to part four in my series about Israel. If you missed parts one through three, they are posted to my website so you can catch up at any time. And when we left off last week, I was in the midst of showing how Israel's war is becoming our war. Yes, jihadists do blame Israel and America, but not for the reasons people think. Their real objection has to do with our freedom and independence. They reject any civilization that will not accept Sharia law, be it Israel, America, or all of Europe. For this reason, we are in the middle of a war, whether we admit it or not. We can refrain from officially declaring war. It doesn't matter. Radical Islam has declared war on us. Yes, Israel's war is our war. If the war was only about armies and weapons, we would win in a heartbeat. Unfortunately, this is also a war of ideas, and on that front, we are losing, hands down. When news first broke of a U.S. soldier gunning down 13 soldiers at Fort Hood, Texas, back in November 2009, we were told immediately, before the facts came in, that the shooter's religion undoubtedly had nothing to do with the massacre. Oh, sure, Nadel Malik Hassan was a Muslim, but that was no reason to jump to conclusions. Most likely, his religion was only a coincidence. Geraldo Rivera of Fox News said, "I don't know what motivates him. He could have had a toothache and gone off because of that." Well, Geraldo was one of many voices making similar comments. Next, we learned that Hassan shouted Allah Akbar while doing the shootings. But at that time, we were gently reminded that this was a disturbed man dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder, a common condition to people who have been on the battlefield, even though, as of yet, Hassan had not been on the battlefield. Didn't matter. As an army psychologist, he spoke to many who had, and this affected him. Yes, you heard me correctly. A psychologist who was unable, supposedly, to avoid his own traumatic stress. But that's not all his psychological expertise offered the army. It turned out that during Hassan's military career, he openly called for Muslims to refuse to fight for America because of unjust U.S. foreign policies. Many rushed in on schedule with parallel commentary that went something like this. Yes, but Hassan has been ridiculed by fellow soldiers for being a Muslim, and we must take this into consideration. Remember as well that most Muslims are very peaceful. Well, more information continued to pour in. Hassan wrote blogs that glorified suicide bombers and gave a PowerPoint presentation in the army where he said, "We love death more than you love life." He also said non-believers should be beheaded. Asked how such an individual could have remained in the army after those proclamations, General George W. Casey promised it was being looked into. He then went on to say, our diversity, not only in our army, but in our country, is a strength. And as horrific as this tragedy was, if our diversity becomes a casualty, I think that's worse. Ladies and gentlemen, I never thought the day would come when such gibberish would fall from the lips of a U.S. general. Losing diversity would be a worse tragedy than seeing 13 American soldiers gunned down inside their own fort by a fellow soldier. Just what kind of diversity is General Casey thinking about? Certainly not diversity of opinion. Apparently, the opinion that Nassan's Islamic teachings should be confronted was an opinion that did not pass the politically correct litmus test. How nice to see our military become yet one more platform for social engineering. Throughout the daily news reports, constantly morphing into deeper revelation, we were admonished that even if Islam were found to be the motivating factor, we still cannot call this terrorism because Nidal Hassan was not connected to Al-Qaeda. Well, that must have been a great comfort to the families of his victims. Oh, our son's murderer wasn't involved with Al-Qaeda? What a relief. Finally, we discovered that Hassan had indeed corresponded with Al-Qaeda. In the face of this news, Chris Matthews of MSNBC offered the topper of them all, a Pulitzer Prize caliber comment. That's not a crime to call up Al-Qaeda, is it? Now, admittedly, Matthews' comment sounds so outrageous, we should do him the service of placing it back in proper context. Here's the context. How do we know when someone like Hassan is going to make his move, and do we know he's an Islamicist until he's made his move? He makes a phone call or whatever, according to Reuters right now. Apparently, he tried to contact Al-Qaeda. Is that the point at which you say this guy is dangerous? That's not a crime to call up Al-Qaeda, is it? Is it? I mean, where do you stop the guy? Brilliant question. Why should our government take some kind of proactive step toward getting to the bottom of a guy who contacted a terrorist organization? Well said, Matthews. There was a time when we considered it an act of humility to appraise one's education and say, and you've heard this familiar saying, the more I learn, the more I realize how little I know. I believe in that saying, but with so much of our mainstream journalism hijacked by political correctness, it seems the more they learn, the more they decide how little they want to know. Many of them do not seem to want to know that there's any real danger from Muslim extremists, perhaps because such truth takes them away from the real crusade against conservative extremists. The Obama administration finally dubbed the attack workplace violence. This meant that the soldiers who fell that day did not even qualify for Purple Hearts. Eventually, Purple Hearts were finally awarded, but not until many years later, in 2015, as a result of a new law from Congress spearheaded by Senator Ted Cruz, which broadened the eligibility of Purple Hearts in cases where, quote unquote, the individual or entity was in communication with the foreign terrorist organization before the attack, or the attack was inspired or motivated by the foreign terrorist organization. Today, Nidal Malak Hassan's religious motivations are no longer being denied, although many in the media, in the military, and in the government will still go out of their way to explain that it has nothing to do with authentic Islam. Meanwhile, we continue to argue about whether or not this was technically a terrorist attack. A crime? Certainly. A murder? Sure. But a terrorist attack? Well, maybe, but let's be careful here. Truth be told, the term terrorist is too general anyway, because we are not at war with all terrorists. There are many kinds of terrorists with many kinds of causes. But the term Al-Qaeda or ISIS is too specific, because there are many Muslim terrorist organizations who have declared war on America besides Al-Qaeda and ISIS. Now, before you clutch your chest, yes, I agree, the term Muslim is also too general because, once again, there are many peaceful Muslims and many loyal Muslim American citizens, but we must still avoid the politically correct claptrap that these terrorists do not represent any wing of Islam at all. Properly defining our enemies is important not only for those who deserve Purple Hearts, but for a country that hopefully will not need to award too many future Purple Hearts. It is difficult to rally against an enemy who is not clearly pointed out. When we fought against the Germans in World War II, any thinking person realized that not all Germans were Nazis. But we were still at war with Germany. Calling the country Nazi Germany may have helped to distinguish it from a friendlier Germany of the past, but we were still able to use the words German and Nazi in one sentence. With that in mind, the most honest term for our present war, fair to all parties, would be militant Islam or perhaps fundamentalist Islam. But don't be surprised if new attacks against Americans are credited to people who were merely a band of brothers sincerely opposed to Western values. That's too long. How about Western challenged for short? Whatever the title, one thing is clear: militant Islam is not the primary problem. Its battered wife enabler, political correctness, is the problem. Because of political correctness, we are not only failing our own servicemen and servicewomen, we are also forfeiting our leadership around the world. As a result, Europe, too, is getting swept up in this unadmitted war. In 2004, Dutch film director Theo van Gogh was murdered by a Muslim for daring to make a movie about Islamic violence. In 2015, 12 cartoonists and satirists were gunned down by hooded attackers in the offices of Charlie Hebdo, a satirical magazine in France which had the audacity to make sport of Islam, just as they make sport of everything. That's what satire is supposed to be all about. Similar to the Fort Hood incident, the killers burst into the magazine offices shouting Allah Akbar. They did it to avenge their prophet. They were offended by cartoons of Muhammad. On the heels of the massacre, President Obama, a master of bad timing, released more Islamic prisoners from Guantanamo Bay. He did it even though it had been proven that many of these unshackled inmates returned promptly to their Islamist terrorist cause. Asked about the timing, the White House explained that Guantanamo only inspires more terrorism. Guantanamo Bay is the inspiration of Islamic terror? Really? The White House became infamously known for its refusal to articulate the actual phrase Islamic terrorist, opting for the more general designation violent extremist. But the president was in good company. Pope Francis also weighed in on the subject. He denounced the Paris shootings, but he did not take a stand for free speech in the process. He said, you can't provoke, you can't insult the faith of others, you can't make fun of faith. Pope Francis also said everyone has not only the freedom and the right, but the obligation to say what he thinks for the common good. We have the right to have this freedom openly without offending. Oh, I see. Without offending. I guess that means no satire. As a matter of fact, that also means holding back the truth, because frankly, when people speak against the truth or for the truth, and they speak the truth about the Quran, it offends an awful lot of Muslims.
You only need to listen to this radio program once to figure out that Bob has very strong opinions on a wide variety of issues. But one of Bob's strongest passions is freedom of speech itself, even when such speech challenges his own convictions. So feel free to send Bob a comment or a thought-provoking question. You can reach Bob on Facebook, Twitter, or questions at bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to 1170 The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. When people speak the truth about the Quran, it offends an awful lot of Muslims. Then out of their anger for being called a violent religion, some of these Muslims punish those who dared to call them violent. How? with violence. Yeah, that should do it. That ought to correct Islam's unfair reputation. Ironically, people who parody, satirize, and belittle Jesus Christ generally do not worry that a task force of nuns or pastors is going to gun them down. Be that as it may, if Pope Francis believes it is wrong to speak against religions, he should challenge the Quran's anti-Jewish and anti-Christian statements. But don't hold your breath looking for any consistency. Instead, watch the excuses pile up. Freedom of speech, recklessly used, is responsible. Guantanamo Bay is responsible. Got that? Punishing terrorism just breeds more terrorism, we hear. Speaking against a religion and calling it violent only serves to make it more violent. God forbid anyone should consider, even for a second, the remote possibility that any of these cutthroats were inspired by jihadist commands in the Quran. While President Obama is to be applauded for giving the go-ahead to hunt down and kill Osama bin Laden, his speech the following the action showed us that political correctness was still alive and well. As we do, we must also reaffirm that the United States is not, and never will be, at war with Islam. I've made clear, just as President Bush did shortly after 9/11, that our war is not against Islam. Bin Laden was not a Muslim leader. Not a Muslim leader. Bin Laden was not a Muslim leader. That's interesting. Bin Laden's burial at sea would suggest otherwise, a burial described in some details by Navy officers. One just has to ask, if bin Laden was not a real Muslim, why did our Navy go out of its way to give him a proper Muslim burial? Who were we trying not to offend? The peaceful Muslims who would have been insulted if some non-Muslim terrorist was not honored properly? In May 2015, two gunmen, whom ISIS claimed responsibility for, in an attempt to wage jihad against the participants of a cartoon contest in Garland, Texas, discovered that the pickings were not as easy as Charlie Hebdo magazine. Instead, they were stopped by some well-organized security, which anticipated the possibility of such action. Unfortunately, many condemned the contest as much, if not more, than the would-be killers. Organizer of the event was outspoken Pamela Geller, publisher of the blog Atlas Shrugs and president of the American Freedom Defense Initiative. She defended the cartoon drawing event as being in honor of Charlie Hebdo. Frequently accused of being anti-Muslim, Geller retorted, "The problem is that a group attempted to open fire on a gathering of free speech. No one is saying that there aren't peaceful Muslims, as there is a problem in Islam as illustrated last night. And anyone that addresses it gets attacked in the same way. The complaints against this woman are outrageous and the rebuttals should be obvious, but since sanity and logic are so fleeting today, allow me to offer some response. Geller may be one person, but her situation serves as a template for others who have dared to speak up. They deserve to be defended and admired, not pillaged." Haroon Mughal, in an article for CNN, said she, Pamela Geller, went on Fox News and called it a war, and that appears to be what she wants. Well, let me respond to that. It is not Pamela Geller who has declared war, but rather Islamic organizations such as Al-Qaeda and ISIS. They have not been shy about their objective. New Day host Allison Camerata, while interviewing Geller, said there was a fine line between freedom of speech and being intentionally incendiary and provocative. Oh yeah, well, the whole idea behind our First Amendment was to protect offensive speech. Offensive speech. If all speech was going to be friendly and benign, we would need no legal protections. And while we're on the subject of being incendiary and provocative, keep in mind that this event was designed as a reaction against the incendiary and provocative threats coming our way from jihadists, particularly their ruthless murders of many staff people at Charlie Hebdo. It was a time for courageous people to come together in solidarity, letting the world know that we will not be intimidated. The Huffington Post pronounces Geller as guilty of Islamophobia. Ladies and gentlemen, phobia simply means fear. And fear is a neutral word. The appropriateness or inappropriateness of fear depends on the situation. If jihadists have declared war on the United States and the rest of Western civilization, perhaps some sobering fear is warranted. And yet, ironically, the whole purpose behind Geller's cartoon contest was to take a stand against ugly threats rather than being fearful. But if you're waiting for Geller to be called Islamo-courageous, don't hold your breath. The Southern Poverty Law Center weighed in. The Southern Poverty Law Center always weighs in. They put Geller on a list of hate groups. Surprise, surprise. Once again, we are dealing with a neutral word. Some things deserve to be hated. After all, would not SPLC be the first to say that they hate racism, that they hate bigotry? Well, Geller hates murderers who gun people down for drawing cartoons. These same murderers are operating out of their own hatred and bigotry. And then, according to the Washington Post, some Muslims in Garland, Texas, called this event blasphemous. Well, the event may be blasphemous to Muslims, but to those who do not share the Muslim faith, it is not blasphemous. We are not obligated to take on the avoidance of their so-called blasphemy as a border to our speech. Many Christians were upset with an artistic offering called, I don't even know if I could say this on the air, but it included the word urine and Christ in the title. But nobody was worried about Christian retribution. Nobody expected a regiment of Bible study students to go gunning down the sculptor. This is because most Christians have accepted the fact that what Jesus means to them is not to be imposed upon others, even when self-proclaimed terrorists portray Jesus with swinish photographs, which make us sick to our stomach. In response to Geller's subway ads a while back, where jihadists were labeled savages, many New Yorkers called Geller a racist. Spoiler alert. Islam is not a race. It is a religion. Not everybody in the Middle East is Muslim, and many people in the West, including Americans, are Muslim. What Geller is objecting to is a religious-based ideology. But perhaps the most pathetic criticism of all came from Brooklyn Borough President Eric Adams, a former NYPD officer who was also denouncing Geller's New York City ads. He said, "This is irresponsible. It is no different than sitting in a crowded room yelling fire." I think that's the most tired argument of all. The notion that freedom of speech does not give us the right to yell fire in a crowded room. As a matter of fact, it would all depend on whether or not there is really a fire. If an honest-to-goodness fire is blazing in a crowded room, failing to alert the crowd is negligent and irresponsible. In the case of modern-day jihadists, the fire is there. Burying our heads in the sand will not discourage groups like ISIS or Al-Qaeda from cutting them off. Interestingly enough, the last time Al-Qaeda sent a letter to the United States, it instructed Americans to convert to Islam or suffer the consequences. The letter did not say, "Many thanks for all liberal Americans. We really appreciate your attempts to understand us." You see, liberals keep defending the terrorists by explaining what they really want and how we could understand them better if we would only sit down and talk to them. Next, they'll be telling us that Osama bin Laden behaved the way he did because his mother never bought him a sled when he was a kid. Sound silly? The Obama administration came fairly close to that sort of thing by suggesting a more nuanced response to ISIS. Appearing on MSNBC's Hardball, spokeswoman Mary Huff said, "We're killing a lot of them, and we're going to keep killing more of them, but we cannot win this war by killing them." Oh no, well what then did she suggest as the ultimate solution? She said, "We need to go after the root causes that leads people to join these groups, whether it's lack of opportunity for jobs. Help them build their economies so they can have job opportunities for these people." Folks, they say if you let an evil person talk long enough, sooner or later he will explain exactly what he plans to do. Whatever else Muslims may think about Guantanamo Bay or Israel or offensive cartoons, the stated core issue with Islamic terrorists is that we will not embrace their religion and give up our own way of life. Their plan to solve this so-called problem has been going on now for many years. You can call it what you wish, but it already came with a name: war. Let the terrorists speak for themselves once in a while. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric, Incorporated, license number 480-539, W&S Electric.
Is it really true that there will be peace in the Middle East if we just have a two-state solution? Or are some people instead challenging Israel's right to exist at all? Is it true that Jews have no historical claim to the Holy Land and stole that land from a people called the Palestinians? Bob Siegel's latest book challenges the historical revision of the Israeli-Palestinian situation and shows how Israel's struggle may soon be the struggle of the entire world. The Holocaust Against Israel by Bob Siegel, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
False. America's modern-day values of equality, feminism, and moral relativism causes them to reject any patriarchal movement that would impose its values, including Islam. False. For a while after 9/11, our nation actually responded with sanity. Considerable solidarity was witnessed even between both sides of the political aisle, liberals and conservatives alike. While distinctions were made between violent and peaceful Muslims, we nevertheless understood that the terrorists were on some level genuinely connected to Islam. The terrorists themselves said as much. They were quite clear. They even bragged about it. But in the quick passage of time, the mindset changed for many liberals. Islam actually came out smelling like a rose. This is an extraordinary turn of events with glaring inconsistency. Given the blatant persecution in Muslim countries toward women and homosexuals, one would think the root of these barbaric practices would be more frequently denounced by progressives and other modernists. Nevertheless, in an ironic twist of fate, Islam actually managed to become a politically correct religion. It took 9/11 to make this happen. After slitting the throats of stewardesses, ramming planes into buildings, and then, in the months that followed, beheading people like American journalist Nick Berg, while chanting to Allah and then posting the whole thing on the internet where all could share in the joy, somehow Islam became known as an extremely peaceful faith. Woe to any who say otherwise. Yes, people were horrified and angry for a while, but then after things calmed down a bit, many Americans found themselves reflecting inward to find the true birth of terrorist reaction. Perhaps we are the real culprits, people said to themselves. Suddenly, America and Israel were the aggressors and instigators. Muslims were only the victims. I had a chance to visit Ground Zero, formerly the World Trade Center, practically 1 month to the day after 9/11. I had been scheduled to speak on a college retreat in upstate New York, and I flew out from San Diego, California to do so. When the retreat was over, I managed to talk some college students into driving me into the city. It was close to 3 a.m. when we finally parked, got out of the car, and began walking toward Ground Zero. On the way, we saw U.S. soldiers everywhere. Despite the Statue of Liberty and the neon lights of Broadway, it felt as if we were somewhere reminiscent of Beirut. When we finally arrived at our destination, we saw workers on steam shovels digging up debris. Smoke, even 1 month later, was still coming up from under the ground, serving as an eerie reminder of this horrific event. A large fence enclosed the entire work area, illuminated against the dark. I stood quietly with the students and other spectators. It was chillingly silent. It seemed unreal. We were unable to put our feelings into words. After a while, two other visitors, a husband and wife, broke the silence by talking with me. They were also from California, so our conversation began with something in common. Their friend had been at work in one of the towers that fateful day. She was now dead. I'll never forget what the wife said to me. She said, "I'm just trying to understand what we did that makes them hate us so much." "Maybe we did nothing," I answered. "Maybe they are just evil. Oh, the expression on her face was one of astonishment. Clearly, I had given the wrong answer. In her opinion, like so many other mindsets today, we must have provoked them somehow. This had to be about our oil interests in the Middle East or some other action which offended people to the point of creating a backlash. Nobody could be this evil simply for evil's sake. In fact, there's probably no such thing as evil. Well, if evil doesn't exist, it is inconceivable that America or Israel is being targeted by evil. Instead, people find themselves fishing desperately for alternative explanations. Without a moral compass to guide her, the poor woman was utterly confused about exactly what happened to her dear friend on 9/11. Why do people have such difficulty identifying downright wickedness? Part of it is the times we live in, an era frequently dubbed postmodernism. Postmodernism is a term coined for increasingly popular trends which re-examine traditional values. For example, because of postmodernism's influence, many will immediately dismiss this lecture series I've been doing on the radio the last few weeks as paranoid Islamophobia, a new politically correct word embraced by Muslims because they see how convenient it is to their cause. It is next to impossible in a university environment to call Islam evil or to call any movement evil unless, and it's a big unless that movement is associated with Judeo-Christian values, conservatism, or positive views of America. In a single breath, a person can talk out of both sides of their mouth. On one hand, they insist that the very word evil is a conduit to old-fashioned ideas that any sophisticated person has outgrown. Only a simpleton would accuse a murderer of evil. Those who kill do so for a reason. They were poor or abused. They were misunderstood or unfairly judged. They lost their loved ones and they were taking understandable retribution. They may even have been mentally unstable, but they were not evil. Such a description in the minds of ivory elites demonstrates simplistic backwards thinking void of the nuances that will be seen by a truly educated and progressive individual. What I am saying is this, ladies and gentlemen, postmodern America, with its ideas of moral relativism, has tilled the ground, making it ripe for a movement which seeks to expand and conquer. It makes the terrorist's job easier. This is Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Jesus said that his people should be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Some churches take that mandate seriously, others, sadly, do not. I am happy to announce that there are many good, serious churches in San Diego, and Skyline is certainly one of them. Outreaches to the community and the world at large are carried on by our missionary family. Their ministries to the poor, the shut-ins, and the emotionally scarred. There are groups and classes for all ages, from children to middle school to high school, college, young adult, and senior citizen. Skyline is also on the cutting edge of today's social issues. We mobilize people and help them to be a better voice for the changing culture around us.
Skyline Church, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m.
Philosophies are different as night and day. Radical Islam and postmodernism are involved in a strange, dangerous partnership. A partnership unconscious to the gullible postmodernists, a partnership being exploited by Muslim fanatics. Paradoxically, these same people will blame old-fashioned Judeo-Christian values for many of the evils in the world without noticing how they themselves use or refuse the word evil, depending on the topic du jour. In my religious discussions at universities, I encounter moral relativists quite frequently. Sooner or later in our conversation, they express concern about religious hypocrisy. I always ask, are you morally outraged by religious hypocrisy? When they answer with a yes, I say, well, how can that be if there's really no such thing as universal morals? And while Islam was once included on the list of religious hypocrisies, today it gets a pass, usually by people who understand nothing about it. The defense of Islam is a birth child of postmodernism and political correctness. The attack against Bible believers is another birth child of political correctness. College professors derail Christianity at every opportunity, but everything they hate about the Bible, and I mean everything they hate about the Bible, is also found in the Quran. What religious doctrines do college students absolutely despise today? Hell? The Quran talks about hell. In fact, the Quran describes hell more graphically than the Bible. Here, Surah 4, he that disobeys the apostle after our guidance has been revealed to him and follows a path other than that of the faithful shall be given what he has chosen. We will consign him to hell, a dismal end. Another one from Surah 4, those who have denied our apostle shall realize the truth hereafter when with chains and shackles around their necks they shall be dragged through scalding water and burnt in the fires of hell. Well, how about Surah 5? As for those who disbelieve and deny our revelations, they are heirs of hell. How about the role of women in religion or the submission of women to men in religion? The Bible is also often accused of chauvinism, falsely, I should say, and yet the Quran really does say demeaning things about women. Surah 4, men have authority over women because God has made one superior to the other and because they spend their wealth to maintain them. Good women are obedient. They guard their unseen parts because God has guarded them. I would think today's feminist organizations would be up in arms over Islam's treatment of women. Phyllis Chesler, author of the book The Death of Feminism, came on my radio show as a guest way back in the year 2005. As a young woman from New York, Ms. Chesler had married a man from Afghanistan in 1961. When the two of them traveled to his home country, troubles began immediately. Afghani authorities confiscated her passport, and she became a prisoner for all intents and purposes in the house of her father-in-law, who was ruling his family as kind of a modern-day patriarch. Phyllis's attempts to leave the country were refused by the U.S. Embassy. Only after coming down with hepatitis did she receive permission from her father-in-law to return to the States, and he might just as easily have not given permission. Understandably, this experience inspired Chesler's embracing of the feminist movement. During her fascinating interview on my radio program, this courageous woman shared about her unsuccessful attempts to get leading feminists to denounce the treatment of women in the hands of the Taliban in Pakistan and Afghanistan. What Ms. Chesler discovered was that liberals were more afraid of perception than reality. They did not want to be viewed as being pro-Bush, who happened to be the Republican president at the time I interviewed her. And this somehow meant that they could not criticize Islam. Let me put this as straightforwardly as I possibly can. If feminists cannot recognize that women are being demeaned and persecuted in Muslim countries more than anywhere else on earth, they should give up the cause. Has feminism been reduced only to a movement about the right to have an abortion or the right to a same-sex lifestyle? Do feminists not care when young girls get their fingers cut off or refusing to wear certain coverings? Is it not a human rights issue when a woman is stoned to death for marrying against her father's wishes, as we discussed last week, or ordered to drop charges of rape because the rapist agreed to marry her, as we discussed last week? One of the excuses for looking the other way with regards to the practice in Muslim countries is the nice-sounding notion of respecting other cultures. Yeah, well, respect needs to be earned from cultures or from individuals. The moment we start to think otherwise, we put our own republic at risk. It is already starting to happen. In 2010, Fox News did a story about a court's refusal to grant a restraining order out of respect from Islam. I'm reading from that story. A New Jersey family court judge's decision not to grant a restraining order to a woman who was sexually abused by her Moroccan husband and forced repeatedly to have sex with him is sounding the alarm for advocates of laws designed to ban Sharia in America. Judge Joseph Charles, in denying the restraining order to the woman after her divorce, ruled that her ex-husband felt he had behaved according to his Muslim beliefs and that he did not have criminal desire to or intent to sexually assault his wife. Thankfully, that ruling was overturned by a higher court, but it should send chills up your spine that the lower court judge ruled that way in the first place. And don't think for a moment that this was the end of Sharia law in the United States. In that same year, 2010, Oklahoma City passed a measure that would forbid courts to take into consideration any law other than the laws of our Constitution. Imagine that, a U.S. state wanting to live only under the U.S. Constitution. This law, known as State Question 755, was passed with a high majority of the vote, 70%. It said, specifically, the courts shall not consider international law or Sharia law. Well, a lawsuit was filed by a certain Munir Awad, who was at that time directing the Oklahoma chapter of CARE, Council on American-Islamic Relations. Awad claimed that this new law violated his First Amendment rights. He won the lawsuit, and the ruling was upheld by the U.S. 10th Circuit Court of Appeals, which agreed with the appellate court's assertion that no example of Sharia law application had ever been used in an Oklahoma court, and thus the law was unnecessary. Munir Awad, inhaling the ruling, said, "This serves as a reminder that these anti-Sharia laws are unconstitutional, and that if politicians use fear-mongering and bigotry, the courts won't allow it to last long." Is it possible that people in Oklahoma are exhibiting genuine fear rather than manipulative fear-mongering? Could they be swimming upstream to avoid a problem before it flows through? Perhaps they heard about that Muslim gentleman in New Jersey who initially avoided a restraining order in the name of Sharia law, even though his ex-wife accused him of rape. A kind of Sharia law is also showing up in other places, according to the San Diego Union-Tribune. Just recently, this April 2017, San Diego Unified School District trustees voted 4-0 to confront Islamophobia and bullying against Muslim students. Naturally, no school should tolerate bullying, but rules against bullying already exist in all public schools. When special attention is given to a particular group, there is usually an agenda attached, and the agenda is rather obvious this time. In addition to backlash about bullying, SDUSD students and administrators will highlight Muslim holidays on their calendars and teach about Islam in social studies classes. There will also be safe places at schools for Muslim students in an attempt to confront so-called Islamophobia. In the words of Stan Asian, executive director of Family and Community Engagement, it's more of a comprehensive program, not just a curriculum. We're looking at it from a very integrated and holistic approach. But the most critical part of this new program is a call for a different approach in disciplining students who bully Muslim students. Rather than detention, the school will use a restorative justice method involving the student who did the bullying, speaking with the other student to restore their relationship. Well, since speaking against Islam is prohibited under Sharia law, perceptive people will recognize this new measure for exactly what it is, a type of Sharia law at the public school level. No amount of packaging behind phrases about education and bully confrontation can hide this plan. It may come as no surprise that 150 members from the San Diego chapter of CARE attended the meetings which preceded the direct ruling.
You know, it's common in today's uncertain economy to feel apprehensive. After all, the seemingly limitless choices in the housing market can look quite confusing. You might even know people who shared their difficult experiences with the housing market, sometimes losing money instead of what they had hoped would be a simple and profitable procedure. Well, here's the good news. Realty Executive All Areas here to help. Our track record is proven. Listen. Since 1994, we've sold thousands of homes in the San Diego area. What may seem like an obstacle to you is just a challenge for us. We thrive on multitasking and achieving goals. When faced with opportunities or unique situations, our level of determination goes into overdrive. We're confident we can use our skills to attend to your personal needs.
You can reach my friend Fred Valduti at 619-719-7717. That's 619-719-7717.
Or fredfalduti.com. That's Fred, FALDUTI.com.
Is it really true that there will be peace in the Middle East if we just have a two-state solution? Or are some people instead challenging Israel's right to exist at all? Is it true that Jews have no historical claim to the Holy Land and stole that land from a people called the Palestinians? Bob Siegel's latest book challenges the historical revision of the Israeli-Palestinian situation and shows how Israel's struggle may soon be the struggle of the entire world. The Holocaust Against Israel by Bob Siegel. Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
We've been in the midst of a series about Israel, and you may be wondering, since it is about Israel, why I've spent so much time the first part of this show and the latter part of last week's show talking about the spread of radical Islam in America, in Europe. Well, there was very good reason. I wanted to remind you that Israel's struggle is becoming our struggle, too. The experiences in our own country, if properly assessed, provide firsthand empathy to any who are willing to wake up. Well, moving full circle, let us return now to the relationship between militant Islam and Zionism. Keeping in mind that the religious pronouncements against Jews already quoted from the Quran and the Hadith were written many centuries before any modern-day dispute over land, we finally perceive the current conflict in the Middle East as something unrelated to the need for a separate Palestinian state. It is instead a call for Israel's complete annihilation. One obvious reason is that Israel was born from a religion other than Islam. But there is something else, something that goes beyond the command to eventually wage jihad and impose Sharia law upon all nations. And the additional agenda is a special hatred for Jews. The beloved civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. tried to warn us of this years ago. He tried to warn us about the relationship between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism, a trend not limited to the Middle East, but also found amongst Americans who form opinions about the Middle East situation. Martin Luther King said, and I quote, "When people criticize Zionists, they mean Jews. You are talking about anti-Semitism." Now, while many insist that they can indeed be anti-Zionist without being anti-Semitic, the distinction is not as pronounced as one would think. Generally, where we find one, we find the other. Yes, there are people who personally have nothing against Jews and end up opposing Israel as a result of brainwashing from the media or liberal academia, but there are also some very disturbing common trends. While true beliefs are often masked, you would be surprised how easily the mask can be removed. For example, we generally won't find a Muslim on radio or TV who officially embraces terrorism, at least not in so many words. They renounce terrorism categorically, but I have found that one very simple question reveals how these so-called moderate spokesmen honestly feel. What is your opinion of the Israeli-Palestinian situation? Oh, boy, do you get a different answer then. A few years back, I had a Muslim apologist on this radio show. He renounced terrorism right at the beginning of the interview. When I asked him how he felt about Jimmy Carter encouraging Israel to make deals with Hamas, the terrorist organization elected into office by the Palestinians, I then heard a much different kind of answer. He explained that we do not have good options today in the Middle East. He also went on to say that the Israelis were every bit as much terrorists as Hamas. This kind of moral equivalency argument serves as a Freudian slip of sorts. If one sees no difference between destroying terrorist strongholds and some thug strapping on a bomb and blowing up a bus that includes innocent women and children, if one can excuse the Palestinians for putting a terrorist government into play, indeed, if one can forget that the PLO and their gangster leader Yasser Arafat basically invented terrorism as we know it today, then this person is not really renouncing terrorism. Shortly after 9/11 in September of 2001, Bill O'Reilly interviewed an associate professor of computer engineering from the University of South Florida, Dr. Sami Al-Aryan. Among other topics, O'Reilly was grilling the man because he was responsible for bringing a suspected terrorist to the school. O'Reilly's guest quickly renounced terrorism and expressed shock that his peer might be a terrorist. But in time, the conversation moved to Al-Aryan's own words. O'Reilly says to him, "In 1988, you did a little speaking engagement in Cleveland. You were quoted as saying, 'Death to Israel.' Did you say that?" The following collection of drivel was Al-Aryan's response. "Let me put it into context. We have to understand the context. When you say death to Israel, we mean death to occupation, death to apartheid, death to oppression. Got it? You catching on? See, when he said death to Israel, he didn't really mean death to Israel. Never mind that those were his actual words. Please be advised, when he said death to Israel, he did not mean that Israel was to actually die. Just something very much like that. Whoa, thank God that was cleared up. Well, O'Reilly took the time to dig for truth in his interview. The effort is often unnecessary. Far too often, poisonous words are put forth voluntarily with quick, brazen zeal. In May of 2010, some shocking comments were made about Jews from a Muslim student at the University of California, San Diego, during an exchange with conservative author David Horowitz. Horowitz had been invited to the campus as a guest speaker by the student club Young Americans for Freedom. During an open exchange, Horowitz asked a member of the Muslim Student Association if she supports groups such as Hamas and similar terrorist organizations. At first, she replied with a question, "Are you asking me to put myself on a cross?" Then she continued, "If I say something, I'm sure I will be arrested for reasons of homeland security." Well, so far, the audience was only witnessing a warm-up. The real fireworks were ignited when Horowitz offered the most pointed question of all. He said, "I'm a Jew. The head of Hezbollah has said that he hopes we will all gather in Israel so that he doesn't have to hunt us down globally. For it or against it?" After a moment of silence, the student said, "For it." Oh, later she walked the comment back. This is to be expected when such conversations make the news and embarrass the university. She said, "Had I understood the nature of the question, I would never have responded the way I did, providing an answer that misrepresented my beliefs." Here we go again with another classic explanation. Sure, she just didn't understand. Of course, she must have thought Horowitz was asking if she loved Jews. Maybe she saw this as an invitation to join hands with Jews singing around a campfire and guitar while singing about world peace. You bet. When she said "for it," that's what she meant. Or, inasmuch as the student had already put it on record that she was not renounce an organization which calls for the death of Jews, maybe she did hear the question in a quick, unguarded moment revealed her heart. Maybe she regrets the comment only because of the bad publicity. Horowitz himself gets accused of extreme views. He had referred this event as Justice and Palestinian Week as a cause linked to terrorist groups. Some say that they even caught him calling the group Hitler Youth Week. Now, if true, that would certainly be an extreme statement. But given the Muslim woman's answer to this question and the fact that several terrorist groups are connected to the Palestinian cause, it may be time to remind ourselves that just because something is extreme, that doesn't mean it isn't true. UC San Diego is only one school, and the event was not as atypical as one would think. In April of 2014, anti-Israel student activists at the University of Michigan shouted death threats at Jewish student council members using words such as "dirty Jew" and "kike." At the University of California, Berkeley, a Jewish girl holding an "Israel Wants Peace" sign was deliberately hit with a shopping cart pushed her direction by the head of Students for Justice in Palestine. At Harvard University, the Palestine Security Committee decided to have fun with Jewish students by placing fake eviction notices on their dorm room doors. At Northeastern University in Boston, Students for Justice in Palestine desecrated a menorah and disrupted several Jewish events. In the fall of 2013, San Francisco State University witnessed an all-day event sponsored by the General Union of Palestine Students. This one was especially creative. Participants were invited to make posters and T-shirts saying, "My heroes have always killed colonizers." The colonizers, of course, were Jews. Somehow the fact that Jews have been living in the Holy Land since ancient times was conspicuously ignored, although it's pretty doubtful how many of the Pebren protesters were aware of this fact. The immediate aftermath of these events was not followed up with any official response on the part of universities. Although most professors would not endorse any of the vandalism and would deny being anti-Semites, many of their teachings fuel the fire for Jew hatred by relaying historical revision about Israel. David Klein, a California State University Northridge math professor, put up web pages on the university server calling for a boycott of Israel. What that has to do with teaching math is anybody's guess. We will do more in our series on Israel.
Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170, The Answer, is sponsored by Bob Siegel.